Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Here on The Deep State, we go deep into the stories that the mainstream media doesn't want you to know. The Deep State imprisoned me once upon a time, but now I'm going after the Deep State. I want to bring on Dan Bilzerian. Dan is famous around the world as a poker champion and as an Instagram phenomenon. Well, now he's moving on from his Playboy image and has decided to openly challenge Representative Randy Fine for his Florida congressional seat. This is very exciting for me. Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
Just before we started, before the show started running, you said you were exhausted. Politics is exhausting and it's hideous.
Yeah.
How is this working out for you?
Oh, I mean, not good, but I didn't think it was going to be good. I didn't think it was going to be this demanding as far as going from town to town, talking to people, schedules being booked. I'm also trying to run a company and do all that, so
right.
It's a lot.
Yeah, this is not something for the part-timer to consider doing.
Yeah, and I also just didn't know what I was really getting into either as far as like what goes on in the campaign, the things that you have to watch out for. There's a lot of part of campaigning where people are all trying to get money out of it. You know, they don't look at it as, you know, kind of like, okay, there's this pool of money. How do we get our piece? And I was unfamiliar with that. I was unfamiliar with kind of like how the whole thing worked and C4s and super PACs and how you can raise, what you can say. It's been a bit of an education.
So I've got to ask you, you're already famous. It's not like you entered politics so that you could achieve fame.
Yeah.
Everybody knows you. I've followed you for ages. What made you decide to make this transition from business and a semi-public lifestyle to politics?
I think you need people in office that don't want to become famous, don't want to make money, aren't looking to advance their career. And I think that's the problem with politics today is that guys are getting in there like, me, what can I get from this? And I think government should be a selfless thing. And I don't see it as being that way. I think Trump is looking at it like, what can I get for myself? He has no allegiance to the truth whatsoever. He's lying out of his ass. He doesn't care about, you know, the people that voted for him. And I think that needs to change. And I think if we don't change it soon, it's going to be a disaster.
So I want to ask you about that. I worked on Capitol Hill for years. I worked in campaigns before I went to the CIA. So I have at least a little bit of familiarization. I agree with your assessment that it's all about the money. It's all about who gets a victory bonus or a signing bonus or this bonus or that bonus. I'm sure 80% of your time is spent on the phone asking people for campaign contributions. I used to hate doing that kind of thing. But that's the system that we've given ourselves. Are you getting any pushback financially because of some of the political positions that you've taken? Or are people embracing the fact that you're able to speak your mind because you're not under the control of any party or party faction or special interest?
Yeah, so as far as the message, people love the message, like super positive response on that. As far as giving money, that's tougher too, because now if they give money to me publicly, now they're tied to the things that I say and I've got a really aggressive message. So people believe what I'm saying, they're just not ready to say it themselves. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was important to run, is because I feel like America is pretty unified in their beliefs right now for the first time in a long time. And there's not really anybody that's willing to get out there, put their neck on the line and say it.
You know, this is my position, my analysis of the thing too. Donald Trump was elected because he was not a professional politician, because he spoke kind of out of turn. He spoke aggressively. He talked about transparency. He talked about no foreign wars. People bought into that. And he won twice, maybe even three times. Who knows? He won at least twice, and then we see a vote on Capitol Hill of 419-1 in the House, 99-0 in the Senate to release the Jeffrey Epstein files. Some are released, 3 to 3.5 million pages are not released, and then he just said basically, tough luck. What are you going to do about it? Are you hearing anything like this on the campaign trail?
Well, no. The first thing he said was it was a hoax. Right. That was the first thing.
I forgot that.
That was the first thing he told us was that it's a hoax.
It's a hoax.
You know, and it wasn't a hoax. And we've seen the lesser of the evils, I would assume, right? Because 4 months ago, they were supposed to release everything pretty much unredacted, obviously, other than victims. But they have not only not released half the files, but they over-redacted. I mean, they're covering up for people that aren't victims whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's got people concerned, and rightfully so. You know, you look at what he had said previously about releasing the Epstein files, what his son had said about releasing the Epstein files. Everybody was, you know, pretty much in unison with this, and then all of a sudden it's a hoax.
Yeah.
And then we get a partial release, and, you know, he's implicated in a lot of these files. And I think that's part of the problem, right, is the government is actively suppressing the release of something that they're legally obligated to release. And the scary part is why. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we all know why, but that's, to me, the very alarming piece of this. And they've said, you know, this could bring down the whole government. And it's like, okay, well, if that's the case, you know, then bring it down. Because,
you know, one of the things that I don't understand about this whole thing is, and shame on us, I'm going to preface it by saying shame on us, that the statute of limitations is effectively over for any crime that we may find in the Epstein files.
So, other than murder.
Yeah. And we can have that conversation too, because there very well could have been murders associated with Jeffrey Epstein. There are so many code words. We don't have any idea, for example, what beef jerky means, right? They talk about recipes for beef jerky, processing the beef jerky. The guy's going to come and teach them how to make the beef jerky. How do they preserve the beef jerky? Nobody ever talks about eating beef jerky.
Yeah.
So it's clearly not beef jerky, whatever it is. So aside from murder, the statutes of limitations are largely expired. So nobody's going to go to prison, which is the sad, sick truth. So why protect people? If they're not in legal jeopardy, what possible benefit to the American people could there be to not put the information out there?
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue, right? And same thing could be said about the JFK files.
The same exact thing.
This is a sitting president. Mm-hmm. Why would we not have the right to know who killed a sitting president?
That's right.
And so, yeah, it's very alarming. It's very concerning. And I think that's part of the reason why my message of honesty, unfiltered honesty, is resonating. And I think that's what Trump promised. I clearly didn't deliver on it. And people are frustrated. They're upset. They're tired. And I don't think we have long to try and fix it. I think we have maybe 2 years.
I think you're right, actually. So the Supreme Court has made a number of rulings over the past, let's say, 4 years that essentially gives this and any other president carte blanche to do whatever he wants, right? There was a memo that was written during the Nixon administration saying, there's no law to govern this, but our position is that a sitting president can be convicted of a crime. Well, finally the Supreme Court came out and said, nope, that was just a policy position. It's not based in law. A sitting president cannot be convicted of a crime. So the president's gone hog wild. No. Real estate developments and all different kinds of, some of us might say, grifts. So does that change things permanently in American politics? Should we expect that presidents from now on will behave like this president is behaving, or is this an anomaly and the country's going to reset itself and go back on course like it always was?
Well, I don't think you're setting a very good precedent when the president's allowed to double his net worth. Mm-hmm. You see right before announcements, hundreds of millions of dollars going and betting on things that are about to be released. So clearly there's a leak. Yeah. People are profiting from these leaks. And when you give somebody immunity that is looking out for themselves and they're in a position of power like that, I mean, I think that's very dangerous.
So I want to talk about you. You built your public image around luxury, around risk-taking and personal freedom. You're very, very big on transparency. So how does that translate into governing? Let's say you win this race and you've got a good chance of winning this race. What do you do then on your first day?
Well, one thing you left out was hedonism. not something I'm super proud of.
Well, I count that as personal freedom.
Yeah. Look, I went to the end of the earth with those paths. I think I realized that it probably wasn't the answer. Well, not probably. It definitely wasn't the answer. And so, yeah, I think now I'm focused on trying to have a positive impact. And I think having that experience and not caring about those things is very important, because I think a lot of people do. A lot of people want to be famous. A lot of people want to get the hot girls. A lot of people want to do all the things that I did. And only in doing them can you realize that it's not as great as you think, you know. Yeah. And I always compare it to heroin, because heroin's going to feel good, but it's not the answer. And so I think I won't be corruptible like other people will. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what you need to have in order to feel safe about a candidate. I mean, that's what we thought we had with Trump, right? Because, oh, this is a rich guy. He's not going to do it for the money. And mm-hmm. then did it for the money, you know, yeah. like... And yeah. so, I think there's a very few select people that have had all these things and that don't continue to care about them. And I think that will help you with your judgment, because yeah. if your judgment is focused on what you can do for yourself, or how you can achieve your dreams, or how you can get that dream lifestyle or that hotter girl or, you know, whatever, then you're going to be more of a selfish mentality. And I think that's the problem with our politicians today, is they're focused on what they can get as yeah. opposed to, you know, I mean, it's kind of like JFK, you know, not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for the country.
That's right. I want to ask your opinion on two members of Congress who were elected at the same time, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. We were led to believe they were two peas in a pod. They were ideological twins. They were elected at the same time. They supported the same major issues, but then they took very different paths. Marjorie Taylor Greene became something of a truth teller, a transparency activist within the Republican caucus. Lauren Boebert kind of fell into line the way leadership told her to fall into line. And their careers took wildly different paths. Lauren Boebert got pushed out of her congressional district, ran in a different one, and got elected again. Marjorie Taylor Greene is no longer in Congress. She ended up doing, I think it was exactly 5 years, which is actually to the day it was 5 years. She qualified for the pension on day one of year five, and then her resignation was effective that same day. She was getting death threats. Her son was getting death threats. She called the president and asked for his help. He told her to go fly a kite. So it's not the friendliest place on earth up on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. How would you address something like that? How would you protect yourself, protect your position, your political position in the House, and then still be out there fighting for the issues that you've been campaigning on in this race?
Yeah, I don't think you can really ever fully protect yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm clearly going to be a lightning rod for bad things, probably. It's sad with the MTG thing. I mean, to me, I feel like we're losing some of our best people. You know, I don't know if Joe Kent was one of our best people, but it seemed like he resigned for honorable reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. I feel like we're losing our best people. I mean, how many generals have resigned?
Dozens. You
know, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs. I feel like Massey's like one of the last guys in there really kind of fighting. And look at what they're doing to him. They're spending tens of millions of dollars. President Trump showed up in his district to campaign against him. It's like, what is going on? Like,
it's the most expensive House race in American history.
It's crazy. You know, and this is for a rep seat, and tens of millions of dollars for some random rep seat. Mm-hmm. And it's because he is pretty much single-handedly responsible for releasing the Epstein files and keeping... Yeah. you know, his foot on the gas and trying to have some accountability there, and they're extremely threatened by him. I mean, it's so obvious what's happening. The scary part is that Americans in his district don't even know, because it's a close race. Like, how it's a close race when this guy has been, you know, arguably one of the best, congressmen we've
ever had.
You know,
even if you disagree with him, the guy is as honest as the day is long.
Yeah, he's principled. He's like, mm-hmm. he's doing what he said. And I look at what everybody else is doing, and it's crazy. I just, man, like, talk about a track record. And this is the guy they're going after. I mean, that should really tell you. I mean, I think Massey is a good litmus test for, mm-hmm. I mean, the people that are against him. It's like, they're clearly on the wrong side. The people that are promoting him, I mean, seem to care. That's why when I look around and people aren't endorsing Massey, it's kind of like a little bit of a red flag to me.
I have to agree.
You know, and so I just, man, I can't think of a rational reason the president could defend sending in some random person and showing up in this guy's district to unseat him when what has he done wrong? He's pushed the release of the Epstein files. Like, that seems like a total admission of guilt from Trump's part.
You know, MTG said that when she asked the president why he would oppose releasing the files, he said, "I don't want to embarrass my friends." We should take him at his word.
Yeah.
I mean, himself aside, I think he probably doesn't want to be personally embarrassed himself, but I think his friends probably would be embarrassed. In fact, I was reminded of an episode in the 1980s. I was in college, and Ronald Reagan was president, and one of his best friends, going back 40, 50 years, was, I think his first name was Alfred. Bloomingdale.
Yep.
Right, Alfred Bloomingdale. And he died of a heart attack one day in the 80s. Terrible thing. The problem was he died on top of his 30-something-year-old girlfriend. And so it's embarrassing, especially when you're the Christian president, right? So they talked in the White House about saying, "I didn't really know the guy. I met him once or twice." It's like, no, you've been his best friend for 40 years. You can't just pretend you don't know the guy. They finally came out and said, "He's my best friend for 40 years. This was a very unfortunate incident. I wish his widow well, and I'm sorry this happened." The truth shall set you free. So just tell the truth. The truth's going to come out anyway. It always does. So why not just tell the truth, be transparent, let the cards fall where they may. If it takes down a friend of yours, okay, well, that's on him. If it takes down Bill Clinton, that's on Bill Clinton. So why not just be honest and transparent about it and make it a non-issue? It just seems like we fight this fight time after time after time. Every time there's a would-be scandal, they always take the wrong path dealing with it.
It just doesn't seem like anybody cares about their word anymore.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because in my friend group, if you tell one lie, you're kind of cooked. Like, people don't trust you anymore. Your word is important. And
got that right.
Somehow this generation just seems to have lost that. Like, it's okay that this guy just lies to us over and over and over again, and it's excused. And if he says something enough times, then people believe it, and that becomes the truth. And I think there's this issue with this, like, fake noise, you know, fake news, you're a liberal, Trump derangement syndrome. They have these words that they just throw out to not have the conversation. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it just allows these people to, like, in their mind, win arguments. And the problem is they were right. There was fake news initially. So, like, they have some basis for saying these things. But I see it, you know, with the other side too, with the left, like, you know, you're a Nazi, you're an anti-Semite,
you
know, they just have these words and they shut down conversations. And I see that a lot in America.
And that's the goal.
Yeah, it's just, exactly. Keep us divided, shut down conversations, not have to factually defend your position. So then you just have these blind sheep running around like Trump, no matter what he says, no matter what he does, if I hear something bad. And there's no accountability in the media too. I think that's a big problem. Is you can knowingly just lie, say whatever you want, and there's zero consequence, especially if you're talking about a politician or a celebrity. Like, literally just do whatever you want. I think that needs to change. I think if the news knowingly publishes something false, whether it's a celebrity, politician, or not, there should be real accountability for that. And I think the same thing with politicians. If you knowingly lie to your constituents, you should be held accountable. There should be fraud at a minimum.
You do not strike me as a guy who would look at a poll and say, these are the issues that the poll says I should be talking about. You strike me as a guy who has closely held beliefs and ideas, and you went onto the campaign trail with those beliefs and ideas. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, telling the truth isn't a part-time thing. Like, it's an all-the-time thing. You either are honest or you're not. There's no, like, gray area. I think people have gotten a lot, you know, just way too comfortable with this gray area idea of, like, oh, well, you know, this, it's okay to lie about this, and it's okay to lie about this. And I feel like I can trust somebody when they tell me something that they know that I don't want to hear. And I think America needs more of that. I think they need just raw, brutal honesty and this idea of, hey, I'm going to pull this area and see what they care about. And then I'm gonna pull this area and see what they care about. And I'm just gonna tell these guys what they wanna hear.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is now I can go to your district, your area, your neighborhood, whatever, and I can tell you, hey, you know what? If you elect me, I'm gonna buy you a Ferrari, you're gonna have a $10 million house, you're gonna have a boat in front of it. I can just say whatever I want. Like literally whatever the fuck I want, I can tell you. You vote for me and I just up your taxes and I'll give you shit, and there's no, you know, culpability. There's nothing. Like, and that's, how is that not a big problem? Like, how are you supposed to pick a political candidate if they can literally tell you whatever you want to hear? I mean, right now, Randy Fine just told everybody, like, hey, I'm not going to send any more, vote to send any more money to Israel.
Yeah.
Which tells me that he's scared.
That's page one news, by the way.
Yeah. Which tells me that he's very scared. And it also tells me he's full of because I've literally seen him walk around and vote for other people's, you know, desks for his bill to send Israel more money. So he's clearly passionate about it. I mean, this guy is like Jew first, America last.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I'm just like, you know what? He's gonna lie to everybody. And if he gets reelected, there's gonna be no consequences when he votes to send more money to Israel.
I'm a regular up on Capitol Hill. Besides having worked there for years, I go up there because I believe in my constitutional right to petition my elected leaders. One of the things that has always struck me as absolutely, positively inappropriate is offices like Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas and Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, and a handful of members of the House that have the Israeli flag outside the front door of their offices. Wholly inappropriate.
There's a lot of them. I mean, look at Randy Fine. It's higher in his office than the American flag, which is against flag
code. It's against
code.
The law.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's just, he doesn't give a right. Right. And there's no consequences. For some reason with Israel, I mean, if that guy had a Chinese flag, you
oh
imagine?
Oh, my God, imagine.
You imagine the backlash? Mm-hmm. But Israel is whatever. You know, they got this pin with Israel and America. It's like, what is going on? Like, if you replace Israel with any other foreign country, everybody would be like, you know, this country is trying to take over America. You know, if you said it about the Chinese, you know, if you said it about the Russians, said it about any other country, I don't even care who it is, you know? You know, Britain, whatever, it'll be like, you know, we got to get these people out of the country. But with Jews, the first thing that comes to your mind is like, oh, but not all Jews. You know, we wouldn't say, but not all Chinese. We'd be like, no, we need to get this Chinese influence out of America.
You would be automatically branded an anti-Semite if you were to say that publicly. Yeah. And this is something that the Israeli government actively promotes. We recorded an earlier episode in which I mentioned that I'm a nobody, but I've begun getting death threats. And my most recent death threat, the guy signed his name to it and put his email address, like he wants to engage me in some kind of, you know, death struggle or something. And he's a prominent rabbi from New York City. He runs a nonprofit that treats Jewish children with cancer, not anybody else's children, just Jewish children with cancer. And he's wishing me death, not just death to me, but death to everybody like me. And what, we're supposed to just take it? That if we don't fall into line, like Randy Fine, in support of the Israeli government, not even just Israel, but the current Israeli government, then we are anti-Semites. And I reject that outright, out of hand. I'm curious as to what kind of reaction you're getting.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, this is a group of ethnocentric supremacists. Mm-hmm. And that's my problem with Judaism, is that it teaches that you're better than other people, that you're chosen by God. And I just reject that completely. I think everyone's equal. And saying that is like anti-Semitic. It's crazy. Like being against bombing children is anti-Semitic. Like being against a foreign government. It's like, it is a word, just like Trump derangement syndrome, just like Nazi, just like Hitler, that, you know, has been so heavily propagandized that when you hear it, you have this visceral reaction to it. You know, I mean, like 5 years ago, you heard the word anti-Semite, the, you know, hair on the back of your neck would stand up and be like, oh,
yeah,
you know, oh my God, you
and
know,
now,
like the Holocaust, you know, Nazis, like any of these words, they just evoke a certain reaction. You don't get that with Mao. You don't get that with Stalin.
No.
People killed tens of millions of people. You don't hear that. You don't get that with the Bolsheviks.
That's right.
You know, and
they've overplayed their hand.
No, it's clearly propaganda. And it's like, why is this propaganda? Why are we like so conditioned to respond to these words? And you know, you see it. They're just so arrogant today. It's like he signed his name on there because he knows you can't do to him. And even if you did, he would just flee to Israel, and because he's Jewish, he'd get citizenship the next day, and they wouldn't extradite him. And he
just
could,
like the pedophiles.
He could rape your kid.
Yeah.
And just, he could flee to Israel, and they would not send him back. You know, just like the head of cybersecurity, he did that in Vegas.
Vegas.
Yeah, he fleed, and they're not extraditing him, and nothing's going to happen. Just like nothing's going to happen to the Palestinians that were raped in the prison by the IDF that
That's
they have
right.
on video. They just, you know, excused all the charges. Now those guys are celebrities. And so you just see there's just this two sets of justice. And if you dig deeper, it says that same thing in the Talmud. It says all this in Talmud. You can lie, cheat, rape, and steal to non-Jews. And like, that's a crazy thing to say. And people will, you know, oh my God, you know, a year or 2 years ago, you get killed for saying that. You get debanked for saying that.
That's right.
I think the Overton window shifted a little bit, but it doesn't make it any less true. And I think it's something that needs to be talked about because we were conditioned. I mean, at least me, like supremacy is bad. White supremacy is bad. You know, black supremacy is not quite as bad because they're victims and, you know, whatever. But like this idea that supremacy is just wrong. And I mean, they told us literally that white supremacy is the greatest threat to America today. They told us that.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the idea that supremacy is bad because I believe that it is. I think that if you think that you're better than other people, you're going to act like an like just generally, right? Like, I mean, if you viewed, you know, other people like, you know, cows or chickens, like you wouldn't treat them with the same level of humanity that you would a human. At least, I mean, most people would not. I mean, I love animals, but I still wouldn't, you know, treat them the same way I treat a human.
Right.
Right? And so this idea of supremacy, that needs to be discussed. And for some reason, when it's Jewish supremacy, it's like this taboo topic. And I just don't think Americans want to ignore it anymore.
Thanks very much for being with us today. That was Dan Bilzerian. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State. And remember to always, always ask the questions that the government wants you to forget. This conversation was a perfect example of that. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.